We talk about metaphysical topics and unfiltered news of the day, and we always have fascinating guests. So we go live at 9 in the morning, and then we rebroadcast 9 p.m. at night every Thursday. That's our time slot, and that's Pacific time, by the way. We have a great new co-host who's going to be coming on about 20 minutes per segment for each show. Her name is Candia Sanders, and she'll be phoning in about half past the hour. She's a psychic, and she's willing to do free readings on the air. So, if you want the phone number, you can go to the bbsradio.com website. It's right on the front page. And about half past the hour, you can start calling in. So let's start with some news of the day. What I wanted to get into today is the video news releases. I want to educate my audience about this. I know a lot of you are watching mainstream news, and although less and less of us are doing that, personally, I haven't watched mainstream news in years. I go right to the internet to news websites to get my information. But what video news releases are actually, I'm reading from an article this summer in The Independent, and it's fake news. It's produced by corporations or the government, and they put together a fake news package. For instance, they may do a report on skin cancer or something, and then they will actually recommend brand names to use for sunblock to put on your face. And it's a type of a commercial, and it's produced, of course, by these companies that make the sunblock. When it was time to go to war in Iraq, the administration put together some fake news stories persuading the public why we should go to war in Iraq. And these were actually run on local news stations all over the country and introduced as normal news, as if they had produced it. So they're called video news releases. They got in trouble with the FCC earlier this year. A group is investigating them. It's a nonprofit group called the Center for Media and Democracy. And during their research, they found over a 10-month period, at least 77 local news stations were making use of these faux news broadcasts. So this is something I want my audience to be aware of. We're just bombarded with news every day, but so much of it is filtered and canned. And I try to give you unfiltered news so we can let you know the real important stories of the day and things happening out here. So please be aware of these video news releases, and you can see them interspersed with the news on the local channels. So let's move on. We're going to talk a bit about chemtrails. There's all kinds of information on the internet about chemtrails, but very, very little in the mainstream media or newspapers. What they are airplanes that fly across the sky, and they release vapor trails, usually in large major cities, not just in the U.S., but all around the world. And these vapor trails, if it's a normal chemtrail, if it's a normal vapor trail, it will disappear within 30 seconds. That's regular. That's how it's supposed to be. But if they linger in the sky for 8 hours, if they stay all day long, and they turn into thin, milky, murky clouds, it's a chemtrail, and it's artificial spraying of chemicals. And it's something that's being done on a frequent basis. People started recording it and noticing it around 1997. And the skies changed all of a sudden. We had less and less blue skies and all of this artificial cloud cover. And the airplanes would fly in grid-like patterns. Now, there was one mainstream newspaper that did cover chemtrails. They put the story on their front page in the Las Vegas Review. You can look that up online, actually. And within weeks, the writer of the article had been fired and lost his job. And that's kind of what happens with a lot of these stories. If you break a taboo subject, you may lose your job. And that's also how you get promoted, is by keeping quiet on certain issues. That's how you make it to editor and move up the ladder or the pyramid. So there's some really good websites on chemtrails. You can go to bariumblues.com. Barium is one of the metals that's been identified. And, you know, we don't know the effect of these heavy metals like aluminum and barium on our health and on the public. We know there's a lot of illness and respiratory problems, and we know Alzheimer's disease is at an all-time high. Is it related to chemtrails? I don't know. Once again, the investigative media is not reporting on this story, so you have to go to alternative websites and read books to get this information. Jeff Rentz is an investigative reporter who does a pretty good job on chemtrails. He's at Rentz.com, R-E-N-S-E.com, and he has a section in his website on chemtrails where you can get more information, too. So there's lots of speculation as to why this is being done. Some people say it's to block global warming, to provide a shield. It's here to help us. That's one group of people that says that. Another group says this is about depopulation and just making the population passive and lethargic. And a lot of people say that because aluminum in small doses has been shown to make people lethargic. It was used in Nazi Germany to make all of the prisoners passive. That's when it first started to become in use. And it's in toothpaste. It's in a lot of fluoride toothpaste. And there's quite a bit of controversy about that. And, of course, as you know, our water's been fluoridated all over the United States. And there's raging controversy about that, too, under the radar. So please look into all these issues. Please look into aluminum in your fluoride. And there are toothpaste, by the way, you can get without fluoride. The best thing to do is shop at a health food store or one of the natural food grocery stores. And there are plenty of toothpastes without fluoride. I've been off of it for probably 2 years, and I just feel more sharper mentally. I'm less forgetful. I'm more on top of things. But I don't have any proof of this, of course. It's just I'm just relating what I feel, and I've talked to many other people in the metaphysical community, and they've become very aware of chemtrails, and they're asking their congressmen questions and their local officials, and asking about fluoride and aspartame as well. Aspartame was introduced in the 1980s into many, many, many of our products. Soda pop and almost every kind of gum and mint has aspartame in it. And one of the stories that I've been following for the past year is the state of New Mexico is trying to ban aspartame. And you would think this would make national news, but it doesn't. I found it on Rentz.com. And there's quite a bit of controversy in the Senate and House of New Mexico as they debate whether or not to ban aspartame. So please start doing research into these subjects and find out if... you know, if you want to switch over, you know, I'm off aspartame for the most part. You know, it is hidden inside of some foods, but I don't drink soda pop with aspartame. You can find soda without it. You can find gum and mints without it. You just have to look around a bit. So that's another interesting issue. One of the other websites I like to point my listeners to is davidicke.com. Some people pronounce it David Icke if they don't know him, if they're kind of new to his research. It's davidicke.com. It's spelled I-C-K-E, davidicke.com. And he's a fascinating guy. He's an Englishman. And I'll just spend a few minutes telling my audience more about him because he's a real free thinker. And he talks about how the world is actually structured and how a lot of the truth has been filtered from us. So he's from England, and he was a celebrity during the 1980s in England. He had a talk show. He was like a Johnny Carson type of personality. And then one day he just had an epiphany, and his spirit guides and angels spoke to him and started to reveal the truth of what's going on in this planet. And they told him a lot about the New World Order that's coming, the One World Government, a lot of the secret societies that are meeting together privately and putting together this global police state. And if you go on his site, he talks a lot about how there's plans to microchip the public, and they're actually already doing this in some foreign countries. The country that's really leading the way as far as a police state is England, David Icke's home country. There's thousands and thousands of cameras on the street and in public buildings all over the country. And, of course, if you study the Illuminati, you find out that the home and the center of the Illuminati is the royal families of England. And so, of course, this is where the police state would be implemented first. Now, what they've done in Europe is in the 1970s and 80s, they put together trade agreements. so people could have free trade, and the Europeans went along with it. They liked this idea. Well, what happened is these trade agreements turned into a global government or a European Union. So now there's 35 countries or so locked into this European Union, and countries like Italy and France and Spain have lost their individual sovereignty and a lot of their individual representation. And so that is the goal, is to consolidate power in this global government. Some of the main groups that are working on this, and David Icke goes into detail and explains all of the mechanisms for how this works, are the in Europe, the group is called the Royal Institute of International Affairs. There's another group called the Club of Rome. The Vatican is said to be involved in this. In America, the secret group that's private, that's unelected, that is pushing very hard for globalism is the Council on Foreign Relations. And they have complete access to the media. If you watch mainstream news shows, they always turn to their experts in the Council on Foreign Relations. And they had a heavy promotion a couple years ago to get us involved in the war in Iraq. And they pushed the free trade agreement NAFTA during the 90s. This is what the CFR did. And NAFTA, basically what ended up happening is a lot of factories and really great jobs that Americans could make $15 or $20 an hour for were moved out of the country. A lot of the heartland jobs in Ohio and Indiana, Kansas and Missouri, a lot of those factories in the Midwest, after NAFTA was passed, went off to China and Mexico and other countries, and Americans lost their job. So we're losing our middle class, and that's another goal of the New World Order, is to have an elite ruling class, the rich and the wealthy, and then to have a massive group of poor, uneducated, cheap labor. So what they're trying to do right now is break down the borders of the United States and create a giant North American Union from the very top of Canada, the North Pole, basically, all the way down to the southern tip of Mexico. So a council, there would be no more Congress or United States government. That would all be dissolved. No more Bill of Rights, no more Constitution. What would happen in its place is that there would be a council of Canada, Mexico, and the United States, and they would govern this whole giant economic zone. They would no longer be individual sovereign countries. It would be a giant economic zone. And we would have much more of a police state in this situation. So it's important to be aware of these issues. And David Icke is an excellent researcher. Probably the best book he's written on this subject is called And the Truth Shall Set You Free. And that's a great title because that's how you feel after you read it. You feel like the truth will set you free. It helps you understand the way the world is structured and the way politics are structured, and it gives you a sense of freedom, and you can make better choices once you've read these books. So he also, about 10 or 15% of his work is very controversial. He talks about UFOs and aliens and how they have the ability to shapeshift and appear human at times and other times appear more reptilian. And it seems crazy when I first heard about it that there could be reptilian aliens on this planet. But I've done a lot of research. I've produced a DVD called The Sands of Time. And I would love for all of my audience to watch this wonderful DVD presentation. And you can find it over at fountainsofyouth.net. That's at fountainsofyouth.net. Just click on DVD. And when I was researching this material, I had read David Icke's theory about the reptilians, and I started looking at these ancient statues in Egypt and Samaria, and some of them had a reptilian appearance. It blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. And, of course, if you look at the Egyptian artwork on the walls of the temples, I mean, some of these gods, they look part reptile, part human. Some have, like, the head of a crocodile, or some look bird-like. They'll have the head of a bird, like Ra, the Egyptian god Ra, and then the body of a human. So my research somewhat confirmed his theory. And then I started researching down in Mexico who their main god was, and his name was Quetzalcoatl. And he appeared humans many times. He looked Caucasian with a long beard. But then other times he appeared reptilian. the name Quetzalcoatl means feathered serpent. So he looked somewhat like a bird-like snake, the way the drawings of him were rendered at that time. And he was this teacher of mankind in Mexico and Central America. So it's a really interesting theory. I hope all of you at least read one David Icke book or go to his website at davidicke.com. And you can just start. He always has excellent news of the day. All of the interesting, unfiltered stories. He's been on aspartame and fluoride for years, you know, that we talked about earlier. And he's been on 911 for years. He wrote a book right after it happened, about a year or so, and it's called Alice in Wonderland, because he's just talking about how 911 was just a complete fantasy. And now here it is 5 years after 911, and the public is really catching on to the alternative theories of 911, that these buildings were actually a demolition and exploded, especially building number 7. It was a 47-story high skyscraper, and it was never even hit by a plane in New York. And the media really didn't talk about it much, but it fell within 8 seconds. It fell about later on that day, about 5 p.m. And once you start studying Building 7, you realize that something completely different happened on that day. And a lot of the witnesses, of course, talk about bombs blowing up. And I went to a very powerful seminar this summer, and I heard one of the janitors who worked in World Trade Center 1 speak, and he said flat out there were bombs and explosions in the basement first, and then about a minute later, then the plane hit the building. And he ran down to the basement because the sound was much bigger in the basement. And many people were burned and killed, and he helped rescue all of these other workers and janitors and bring them out of the building. Once again, it's a completely different story from what we've heard from the official report. So if you want to dig into 911 a bit more, you can read David Icke's book called Alice in Wonderland at davidicke.com, or go to 911truth.org. That's a really good website. But now the polls are showing over one-third of Americans are questioning the official story. Of course, the film star Charlie Sheen came out and caused a big splash earlier this year and was questioning it on TV. And so something's going to happen, I believe, in the next year or two. There's a film coming out called Loose Change that will be released in theaters. So you can get it for free right now on the Internet. But more and more people are really looking into this this event that happened. So one of the other things I do is I'm a national tarot card reader. I read nationwide over the phone. So if you're interested in having a reading, you can find out more about tarot and go to my website at fountainsofyouth.net. And my new co-host is a psychic as well, and she'll be giving out her information. So I've kept my rates low and reasonable. I used to work for a psychic line that was like $3 an hour, and I just couldn't do that. I can't charge those kind of rates. So I've kept it, about $25 for a half hour and about $50 for an hour, which is, quite reasonable for a psychic reading. And I always ask people to just, if you're at a crossroads in your life, come and have a reading and use me as a sounding board to try out different ideas or theories, because you don't want to take the wrong path in your life and waste time. For instance, if you're thinking about going to school, you don't want to choose the wrong major in college and waste a few years of your life studying something that you really don't want to do. I mean, there's so many people that I read for, they'll go to law school for 3 or 4 years and just give up so much of their life, and then they'll be a lawyer for 6 months and they'll find out that they hate it. And, I really wish these people would have come and seen me before they even started to go to law school and find out the real reasons why they're even doing it. Are they doing it just for the money? Are they doing it for the status? Are they doing it because their family is making them, because their parents were lawyers? I mean, if you're doing it for those reasons, it's not going to work. You have to really follow your passion, like I've done. I have a real passion for tarot reading, and that's what I do, and I love it. And I never am bored reading tarot. I always love it. And that's how your life's work should be. I'm never looking at the clock. You know, if you're a clock watcher and your work, you're in the wrong profession. And it's okay to do that for a while as you're regrouping. You can take a job you don't like. You can be a waiter, for instance, for a year or two as you're moving on to something else, but you can't get stuck there permanently. It's very depressing. So I work with a lot of people on those types of career issues and help them find out their passion. My other passion is radio. I love sharing all of this information, as you can tell. And I love doing this weekly show. It's a real passion. So try to find things in your life that really excite you. And yesterday I taped my second DVD. I'm really excited about that. It's called Temples of Stone. And in the first DVD, I researched six ancient cities all around the globe that were very sophisticated, that sprung up out of nowhere. For instance, today I'm going to talk about India. There was a lost city called Mohenjo-Daro, and I talk about it and show pictures on my DVD, The Sands of Time. And you can order that for $15 plus shipping at fountainsofyouth.net. That's fountainsofyouth.net. And Mohenjo-Daro sprang up about 3500 BC, and it was an extremely elaborate city. The streets were well engineered with plumbing, and they had granaries, and they had all types of public baths. It was way ahead of its time. They had specialization of their workforce. They had metalsmiths and baking kilns and clay ovens. Normally, if you're looking at societies from 3000 BC, they're all hunter-gatherer community type of tribes. This was highly unusual for this to spring up out of nowhere. And they had detailed and advanced astronomy details and mathematics and sciences and art and languages. And it strongly appears that an outside source, an advanced race of possibly UFOs, came to them and gave them this knowledge. And that's, of course, the ancient astronaut theory that I talk so much about in my DVD. So Mohenjo-Daro, a lot of people don't know about it. It's kind of obscure unless you've traveled to India, and of course then you would find out more about it as you travel across that country. But in the West, it's not well known. But it's one of the six ancient sophisticated societies that I really research and dig into for clues to our past, because we want to know where we came from as human beings and find out as much as we can with ancient documents and ancient architecture that still stands to this day. I also, in my DVD, The Sands of Time, I go into ancient documents, and I'll talk about one or two of them today. I get into the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's a very, very old text, and it's always been taught as fiction, really. It's this story of Gilgamesh. He's this god who goes out into the wilderness and through the forests on this journey, and he's trying to find immortality. He wants to live forever, and he meets all these various gods. And it's generally been taught as fiction or thought of as fiction by the experts. But what's fascinating is that there's a biblical story. The tale of Noah's Ark is within the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's part of the story. At one point, he meets Noah, who's building this ark for the coming flood, and he's putting all the animals on the ark. And it's amazing how it corresponds to the biblical text. And these were written down, you know, before the Bible. So the Bible wasn't written down until 700 AD. So it's clear they were working with other more ancient documents when they compiled the Old Testament. And it's really important to read these older texts and ancient documents to get a broader, richer understanding of the Old Testament. So once again, you can research these old texts and ancient documents at fountainsofyouth.net if you order the DVD, The Sands of Time. So in a couple of minutes, we'll be having Candia, our psychic, come on. She'll be calling in, and that'll be a great second segment for our show. My new DVD, The Temple of Stone, you can watch for that on my website. That'll be out in the next month. And I'll just give you a bit of a preview. When I was researching the six ancient sites around the world, I found a seventh site in Cambodia. And it's actually the largest religious structure in the world. And it kind of proved to be the key for the meaning of all these ancient sites, the ancient pyramids in Egypt and Mexico. I found out there was an overall pattern by researching this seventh site in Cambodia, and I tie it all together. So the second DVD, The Temples of Stone, will be coming out in the next month, and you can look for that. But it's really interesting if you look into the ancient beliefs of the Greeks and the Egyptians and the Romans. They really all believed in demigods, or custodial type of gods that ruled over them but were superior to them and interacted with them directly. And this has always been written off as fiction. If you take a college course in Greek mythology or Roman mythology, it will be taught as fiction and myth. But these cultures went to such an extent, and it's so pervasive in their beliefs as far as their interaction with their with the gods. They wrote about it extensively, and there's all kinds of artwork on their walls and temples showing interactions with humans and the gods, that it must be considered that this is actual history, that there used to be a different group of gods that used to be on this planet. And, of course, we know there's some hidden references to giants in the Bible. And it's never quite explained clearly what giants are doing. I mean, there's a passage in Genesis that talks about how the sons of the gods, plural gods, mated with the daughters of Eve and created this hybrid species called the Nephilim. And these were these giants who roamed the earth, and apparently they were very fierce and warlike, and some of them even ate humans, according to my research and the texts I've examined. And many of them were wiped out during the flood. Actually, they were all wiped out during the flood. But they did interbreed again after the flood, and they came down again, and they were known as the Rephaim after the flood. So even, I guess, the most famous giant in the Bible is Goliath. If you read the tale of David and Goliath, you can get some more background on the giants and the tribes in the Middle East at that time. But it's never been fully explained. I grew up in the church, and it was never examined as to who this other group was and what they were doing on the planet and how come they were so different. So that's one of the reasons why it's so important to dig into this ancient history and find out what was really going on back then. And, of course, the public's becoming more and more interested in this information. The Da Vinci Code book was based upon a nonfiction book called Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And that really went into some of this information and basically the genealogies and the bloodlines of the churches. And I believe these genealogies trace back to this other group that used to be on the planet, these demigods, these Anunnaki, these custodial gods. And that was kind of the big secret that the church was hiding. And especially a lot of these documents were under the Temple of Solomon, I believe, and they were found by the Knights Templar who turned into the Freemasons. And so this group has always had this secret knowledge of our hidden history. So once again, go to fountainsofyouth.net, click on DVD, and you can order The Sands of Time. So pretty soon, Candia Sanders will be joining us. She's going to be calling in, and that will be exciting. She's a psychic, and you can go to her website, CandiaSanders.com, and start finding out more about her. She does readings over the phone. So, you know, we're up here in the Northwest in Portland, Vancouver area, but we read nationwide. It's you can really feel the energy over the phone. It works just as well as in person. So wherever you are, feel free to call in, and you can have a private reading from her, or you can have a reading on the air. So she'll be my co-host for the last 20 minutes or so of the Odyssey show. And I want to mention the archives. My archives are up, so for the listeners to the Odyssey show, please go to bbsradio.com. Okay, we're back with the Odyssey Radio Show, and we have a new co-host named Candia Sanders. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking me.
Now, I know you've had a radio show in the past. Why don't you tell us a bit about your background and all the amazing metaphysical things you've done on your journey? Where do we start?
Oh, my God. What a question.
I know.
That could take us a couple hours.
Well, I know you're a psychic.
Yes. So. And I actually, you know, what's funny is because of the the sense of the word psychic, I've kind of moved over into intuitive, because a lot of people get weird about the word psychic.
It has a funny connotation.
Yeah, I think it's from years and years of being bad mouth. Fortunately, now with the television shows, it's kind of come back into good graces.
Well, I like that word intuitive.
Yeah, it works. It works.
It really does.
And that, for me, started when I was a child. I was able, I can remember talking with this woman. I was probably 4 or 5, and she and I were talking about the fairies that were around the plants.
Right.
And then there was another time, also about that same time period, I can tell you exactly what I had on, what swimsuit I had on. I was near a river. And I had sunglasses, and I can tell you, they were a little white, curly up. It tells you, I'm dating myself, you know, the curl up on the edge of the glasses.
That's okay.
And I had rocks, and, you know, as a kid, you're throwing rocks in, and then I stopped because the rocks started talking to me and saying that they didn't want to be in the river, that they were quite happy being in the sun. So I started just patting the rocks, and I thought, okay. And it was funny because at that age, I remember looking around, you know, I was with my family and another group of people, and I remember looking up, I can still see it in my mind's eye as if it were a couple weeks ago, and looking to see if they could hear the rocks. You know, I'm thinking, wow, this is really cool.
So that was your first indication
that
you're picking up different information.
Absolutely. And so that's when it began. And then, of course, I started reading about metaphysics. I was probably, so I could articulate it, put into a better framework, was probably when I was 12.
Really, that early?
Yeah, 12, 13.
So you had an environment where you were encouraged and not discouraged from that information.
Absolutely. My parents have always been, what I would say, very open. They just trusted my judgment.
Right.
They trusted, you know, it's not like I'm out there reading horror things.
No, it was positive, right.
And so, and then, of course, I just opened up more and more awareness. And again, they never thwarted that, which was really wonderful. And the ironic twist on that is, from the big picture, is that my grandmother absolutely shoved down my dad's throat baptism.
Really?
You know, the Baptist faith. Nothing against Baptists, by the way.
Right, of
but
course.
What it did is it forced him to go absolutely the opposite direction. And so because of it, he's been much more open instead of trying to tell me how to think. Because he didn't like it, so because of that, I had a very open attitude growing up, which was wonderful. And it was very inspiring for me, so I could continue to explore. What's great, too, in how I was brought up is that my parents always encouraged me to think outside the box, at the same time looking for facts and figures, so that I have the intellectual side to go with it, because I can be very, very left-brained,
right.
And I actually like the balance of that, where some people get so, and again, this is not necessarily a slight, so airy-fairy, that they don't stay grounded. I feel very fortunate in that respect that I was given this opportunity to learn the intellectual side.
I see. So what's it like going through high school as an intuitive? How did that work?
Well, again, another fortunate twist is that I had 3 best friends that 2 of them thought I was kind of crazy, but we still, you know, had fun because we're high school kids. But one of my other friends in this group, she and I were the ones who exchanged books such as The Search for Bridie Murphy, the early Edgar Casey books, Gina Sermonara, Many Mansions. I could keep going on and on, but these are some of the early books that we traded in high school between each other. And she and I, how many years later, are still best of friends.
That's amazing.
So
were you giving intuitive readings for fellow high school students, or did you keep it to yourself at that point?
Well, between my girlfriends, you know, they'd go, well, Candia, what do you think? What do you feel? But no, I did not at that time.
Right.
You know, because this was the 70s, and it wasn't such a, you know, it wasn't accepted.
Right. So then after high school, as you moved into your adult life, how did you manifest this energy?
Well, through college, to be honest with you, in college, I went to college in Oregon, and in college, I just would use it in terms of, there were so many, I can still, again, remember hits of intuition about different people that I was around, and that's how I, at that time, I kept it more to myself. I was there to learn, and to be perfectly honest, probably to party, too.
Right.
I was your typical college student, but I remember how it helped me through college was understanding those people around me, understanding, and I could see where relationships would develop before they would happen. So I kept it on a much more personal level instead of a larger global level, even though I would continue to read and explore. And again, after I graduated, my reading, I've read thousands and thousands of books. So I've got other people's ideas, opinions, and some I agree with and some I don't. And then when I graduated from college, my mother, as my college graduation gift, you know, some people had trips and things like that, my mother took me to one of the most renowned psychics in the peninsula south of San Francisco at the time.
Right.
And she told me then that I would be sitting in her chair and that I would be a healer. And I thought, yeah, right. The intuitive part I got, because that was always been my desire. Another one of my desires was always to combine archaeology with intuitive, to be a psychic archaeologist. Because I can go to places and I can sense things, I can see things, I can see what was going on. But to somehow convince the archaeological groups that that's possible too.
I think
we're finally getting closer to that.
Right.
You know, due to
little by little. So did you go into a mainstream career, or at what point did you become a professional intuitive?
I did do mainstream. I was in sales, marketing, wholesale, retail.
But you knew it wasn't right the whole time, right?
Yeah, I had fun. But you know what's great about it is that each one of the things that I have done have given me skills.
Absolutely.
You know, to make what I do now better. So I also understand the business world. I have a greater sense of that so that I can help people because I've got a good left brain working knowledge, not to mention education. So that part's really positive. And then I was a full-time mom. And being a full-time mom, I learned great skills with that to make me even a better intuitive because children can teach you so much, not to mention just the basic day-to-day skills because they interrupt you 1,000 times. That I can hold on to a thought, like in a group presentation where someone can ask me a question, and then I go off on a tangent, but then I can come right back to it maybe 20 minutes later, and that has come to me from being a mom.
I see. So it's all these life experiences.
Yeah, so that I feel today I'm even better. And the other great thing, I've been professional, what I would call professional, you know, out there where I actually make it a full-time living has been about 2.5 years.
I see.
Been intuitive. Been doing readings for probably 15, 20 years, but the healing part didn't come until 99.
Right.
And so then I kept getting sicker. To be honest with you, my body kept getting sicker until I decided that I've got to do something about this. And so when I'm healthy now, and it's because I'm doing this for other people. I said, okay, universe, you've given me these tools. Okay, I surrender.
So in addition to the intuitive readings, you're doing a type of body work. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. What I do is an energetic medicine, and I just came back from a conference where I got to study with all the latest and greatest people that are out there on the circuit today. For example, Dr. Eric Pearl, Dr. John Diamond, Donna Eden. And everybody does it a little bit differently. And in my view, there is no correct way as long as we do it, right? So how I have created my own sense of style is I work on the energy bodies around you. We've got the physical body, the emotional body, and the mental body. And where I see 99.9% of all of our issues is in the emotional body. So I work with that particular body of energy, and I can do that from sitting, if you were sitting here in front of me, to somebody that was in East Texas. It doesn't matter because I can draw that energy field to me because on the quantum level, a body can be in more than one place at one time. And then I pull that energy to me and then start seeing things. In fact, I see more by looking at that than I do at the physical body. Now, there are those who do hands-on and they do fabulous work. That's just not necessarily my gift. I can do that. I just see more when I don't look at the body.
Okay, so you're able to do these healings anywhere?
Anywhere.
That's
anywhere.
Wonderful. By the way, your website is CandiaSanders.com. Let's get everybody over there so they can find out all about you. And you're going to be on the last 20 minutes of the Odyssey Show every week. So that's exciting.
Well, thank you.
So tell me a little bit more about parallel lives. I read that on your website. Can you explain that concept?
Okay. We have been trained for centuries now, actually, about past lives. And because I'm in and out of what I call time, what we have created time on the planet, I don't see them as past because everything is happening simultaneously. It's what Einstein says, all time is now, it's all relative. Now, that's really difficult for our brains to wrap around.
Yes.
Because it is. It's difficult. How can you uncrack an egg? Once you crack it, you can't uncrack it. So there is still a sense of forward motion. However, I taught a class this summer on time, and so that we can all work within it. And so parallel, how I look at it is if you were to take a piece of grid paper and every intersection of the grid represents another time frame. Now, you could look at that piece of paper, so it's flat, because, our brains need something that we can look at visually, and that every dot on that piece of paper where the lines intersect are different moments in this life, this particular physical incarnation. And you can go back to when you were 3.5 and 6.5 and 15 and up to when you're 99. Doesn't matter. You can check it on the grid because it's all happening at this point in time. In fact, Disney put together a movie called Disney's The Kid with Bruce Willis, and to me it was totally a Richard Bach story, but I don't think Richard Bach got any credit on it. But he went back and talked to his childhood self, who was a physical being, and then at the end of the movie he gets to talk to his older self, so he can relax and say, you know what, I've done a pretty good job, and he's healed his childhood issues. Well, that's how I see the grid, where you can tap into that. So that goes into parallel lives, where on the grid of life, of all lives, of all existence, it's all happening right now, and that way, if you look at it as a grid, we can then encapsulate that better within our own psyches, our own intellectual machinations within our brain, so we can understand the fact that, oh, okay, so that dot over there represents 1885, and this one over here represents 2062, and you can look at it because it's in front of you, but if you kind of step above it, which would be your oversoul, you can then look into each of those aspects of who you are and then pull out the best of you to help influence who you are today, and then who you are today can then go influence those lives. So does it mean that we can literally go back in time and stop, for example, what we term to be Hitler or whatever point
sure.
in time? I don't necessarily see that we change it, even though there's that whole concept about Montauk and the whole thing during World War II, and I'm sure you're aware of all that stuff because you're into that stuff.
Exactly.
We've got those kinds of experiments that are going on that really do ripple in the space-time continuum. Okay, I get that. But in terms of our individual souls, I believe that we can help influence them and we can gain greater compassion. So as a whole of time, we are all moving forward in a more positive reconnection with Source. So that's how I see it, that if you gain compassion in this lifetime, that you can then influence another aspect of yourself so that, again, the whole of your being is growing to a more exponential, almost what I see as a greater force of light, if that makes sense. I don't know if
it does make sense. No, you explain it beautifully. The next question I want to ask you is, what is your take on the astral plane? What happens to us when I die? In my research and studies, I find that it's kind of a place of rest and contemplation. It's somewhat similar to this plane, and then we regroup and go back. So what's your take on that?
I would agree with you. I also would agree that, and I have a tendency to simplify things because it helps all of us on this level so that we, you know, don't, because we tend to overcomplicate things, so I tend to go the other direction because I can go really, really complicated too. But how I see it is very similar, that it's a transitionary period. And yet, at the same time, what your beliefs, what you have right now can absolutely influence when you leave this body.
Yes.
And there are many layers within that. And let me give you an example, okay? one woman came to me, it's been almost 2 years ago now, where the father of her children committed suicide. And she was and they had been the best of friends. They'd been apart for several years. But they had still been good friends. And so she and her daughters were having a very difficult time, as expected. So she came to me and she said, I really need to know more about this. Now, rather than get too complicated with all the reasons why it happened, I'm just going to jump over to the other side. And how I saw him was for a visual. Now, this goes back to the movie. Just again, we need as humans, we need those visuals. Remember the movie Summer in Time, that incredible historical hotel that Chris Reeve goes
right.
to? I think it's in Michigan.
Right.
I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, how I saw him, his name was Chris, on the other side was that he was at a resort-like spa. And what he was doing, he was sitting in a lounge chair almost by himself, staring off at a lake, and he was in recuperative time because he had committed suicide. And I saw him as, you know, it's almost as if people would come by, and again, for a visual, and this is not the way it is, but this is a visual, okay?
Okay.
As if people would come by and pat him on the back, give him a hug, see how he was doing, souls, not people, but souls. Here, would you like a cup of mint tea, you know, and then leave him alone so he could recuperate because of his experience, of his sadness, his great sadness that he had had on the earth level that would cause him to exit his body. You know, to create.
Right.
So that we create the experiences on that other side. I don't know if I'm explaining to you. I mean, you're
no, no, it's
I
wonderful. I love this kind of metaphysical dialogue. I could do this all day.
and so that's how I see it. So then other people, I've seen, like when my grandparents died, they all came to me. So, of course, all my family's going, what you see? And each one of them, when they left their bodies, I saw them go back to a time in their life when they were young and vital. And you would think that they would come to me as older people because that's the visual I had for
right.
them my whole life. But no, I saw my grandmother more as if she were in her 20s.
That's what Sylvia Brown says.
Yeah.
She says everyone's like 25 or 30. But I would think it would be a wonderful time of reunion for a lot of us.
Oh, it
who,
is.
Who
and then you have
over.
The greeter souls, the souls that have chosen to greet those that come in on the other side, those who've been in, you know, let's say there was a plane crash and everybody exited quickly.
Right.
You'll have those souls that help greet them. And again, let's see, the movie Always. I love the visuals that people can then hold on to when Richard Dreyfuss dies and he's sitting there with Audrey Hepburn in a plane of trees and they are coming to him, you know, the greeter souls to help them acclimate that they are no longer in body. Now, I had another soul and this is not in this life. This is from the lifetime where, again, we'll use past and present and, you know, future in this point in time. This was a lifetime from World War II. And when he was shot down as a fighter pilot, I could see him in his leather bomber jacket. I could see him standing tall going, no, I'm not dead. I'm not ready to go yet. I have things to do. And they go, no, you need to come with us. You're no longer a body. And so that transitional phase went from the plain of Europe into a very similar forested area on astral levels because that was what was comfortable for him. He created that. Now, if someone truly believes that of hell, brimstone, fire,
right.
I see how they create that for them until they realize they don't have to do it anymore, and it's like less than instantaneous. I mean, it's so quick that we can't even fathom it, that it all dissolves, and then it's like, oh, I don't have to do this anymore. Okay, great. And then they create the next level, and they move on to the next level. But I've seen that, too, where people feel that that's what they deserve because they did not do what their intentions had been when they come into this life. They got stuck in the warble, the earth warble.
Right.
And then don't move forward.
So easy to be distracted, isn't it?
Yes.
And I almost think of it's like going backstage at a play, and maybe someone who was your nemesis in this life, you laugh about it afterwards. You're like, well, I was playing this part to be the bad guy, and, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with that. I love it because how I see souls in the astral levels, before we come back into body, right?
Right.
And everybody's, you know, it's like, okay, this play, what this play, I got to be this, I got to be that, I got to be this, I got to be that. And, for example, this wonderful family, I've had the great fortune of working with the grandmother, the mother, the two daughters, the adopted son. Okay, so it's been really incredible.
All the characters in the play.
Yes, to see how this is all unfolded. And the one daughter, they all had problems with her. And they, Candia, what's going on? So what was really great is like, oh, she drew the trump card. She came in and said, okay. And she had like what I would call a mafia suit on. I mean, she had on, and she's very pretty, but she had on this pinstripe suit, and her legs were crossed, like he's sitting in a chair more like a man rather
sure.
than a woman, and with this tough attitude going, well, if you're going to do this, I'm going to do that. You're going to do this, I'm going to do that. So that she would push their buttons.
She so played the villain.
They would learn, you know, what they came here to do in terms of letting go of old issues, whether learning how to stand their ground, to not be a pushover, whatever the case may be. But that was her. And once they got it, she took off her mafia suit and now wears very feminine clothes. Because she no longer had to be that character.
So such release happens when you work with these people and untangle a spider web, right?
Yeah, it's really fun.
This is great. And, you know, I read the books of John Edwards and Sylvia Brown, and they say the same things you're saying.
Well, so you know what? To be honest with you, I've never read their books.
Okay. it's funny because you're almost word for word saying what they're saying.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's good. That means we're all in the same
room. I know.
But I haven't. I truly have not read their books. I actually saw John Edwards on television about 2 months ago for the first time. I know I sound like I'm pretty deprived here, but I don't really watch TV. And
right. A lot of us watch very little television.
Yeah, I watch very little.
In the metaphysical movement, yeah.
And I watched him, how he worked with the crowd, and I could see why he's where he's at, you know. I have a tendency to be more specific. We all work differently. It doesn't make one right or wrong.
Oh, yeah, we gravitate to the right person. But by the way, I actually listen to audiobooks for all these people in the car. And so my familiarity with them is through audiobooks. And
oh,
I encourage everyone to get those.
Oh, I'm with you. Those are awesome.
And James Von Prague and the Abraham Tapes, and they're really great. And if you make one, then we'll talk about yours.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we're winding up the show. So it's Odyssey. Now, are you going to take call-ins live in the morning next week?
Or? I would love to.
Okay. So people need to go to the website, bbsradio.com, and call in that number, and you'll be on the last 20 minutes of the show.
Well, thank you.
I really wanted to do kind of a background to get to know you first, and then I'm sure each week you'll have like a metaphysical lesson or something for us.
Well, what I have found to be true, like when I did my radio show, that my clients, we all have, they'll call, and that week everybody's going to be on the same page. For example, let's say everybody's having lower back problems, and their third lumbar vertebra is off, and then it goes across the pelvic saddle, and so you go in and find out what's going on, and then I literally can energetically put that back into place.
Wonderful.
And then find out the reasons. And it's fascinating how we all do the dance at the same time because we all mirror each other.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what's fun. And
well, with that, we're going to have to wind up the show. Thanks for listening to Odyssey, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye, Candia.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.